Hi, everybody. I'm Allison Jacobson. I'm alcoholic. And I've been continuously sober since the 18th of February of 2019. And for that, I am genuinely grateful. I have a home group, the Buckingham Group in Buckingham, Virginia. That's been my home group ever since, well, gosh, for a very long time. I'll get into that. I've got a sponsor, and I try to help other women whenever I can in our program. Thank you so much, Dale, for inviting me out here. When I realized it was the daylight savings time, and it's the one I don't like. I love when we gain the hour, but I just thought, oh, gosh. But actually, I've done really well because I prepared. and it's been really, really nice. And I was telling the gals, our son, we have a 16 and a half year old son who just officially got his license. And he went out to do some stuff today. And I said, you have got to be home before 6 p.m. because I'm not going to be at this meeting worried about you being on the road. And I checked that Life 360 and he was home and we're ready to roll. But I got nervous. I have a lot of history with some of the people here, and I started getting nervous around 2 o'clock, I think, and I don't know why. And I know God will take over and we'll get this going. Wow. And I have a lot going on right now, but it's all good. And it's all because of you guys showing me how to live. I'll tell you about my first drunk. I am originally from upstate New York. I lived there the first, I think, 13 years of my life. And whenever I talk about upstate New York, I would always say, if I never go there again, it will be too soon. And I'll tell you what, since January of 2023, I've been there at least 5-6 times. And that was probably more than I've been there in the last 10 years. And we just moved my mom. She's almost 89. We moved her from upstate New York to Virginia, and that's a whole nother situation, which I will get into. But that's where my drinking started. And I'll back up. Before I took a drink, I definitely was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I just didn't feel good. And this is all hindsight. I did not know this at age 13. It's just been through sponsorship and doing inventories and stuff like that and Alcoholics Anonymous self-reflection. I just didn't feel good about myself. I would look at you and I would think you had the life I wanted, or you had the family I wanted. And my brother and I grew up watching the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family. I don't know if anybody else in here did that, but we would be glued to that TV on Friday night, I think it was. And I remember going to bed thinking, why isn't my family like that? And, you know, now that we have our son and some of the, not those shows, but other family shows come on, I think, gosh, I wonder if Jake is thinking, I wish my family was like that. But anyway, I just always felt uncomfortable. And I remember this one guy, I remember hearing a speaker a long time ago saying he thought he was just born feeling uncomfortable. And that was a good way to put it. I think I was born feeling uncomfortable. I didn't know how to live, and I felt like other people around me did. And so I would do whatever I thought you needed me to do in order to be accepted. If that was tell a lie, even when I didn't even need to, I would tell a lie. If that was stealing so I could get things so you would approve of me, that's what I would do. And this is, I did all this stone cold sober. I made a sober decision to do those things. And the evening I was introduced to the effect produced by alcohol, I think I was 13 years old, and my friend Jennifer Bluestone and I were on a double date. And I laugh now, you know, I just turned 59 years old this week, and I laugh because I think we thought we were such hot stuff. And and now I look at age 13 and I think, oh my gosh, what were we thinking? It was a different day and time back then, I can assure you. It was 1979. And so anyway, back then you could get a fake ID really easy. You could make them. Nobody cared. There wasn't all the strict rules and regulations that are in place now. And my friend Jennifer somehow got a fake ID, and she went to the Rite Aid and bought 2 12-packs of Molson Golden. And then the rest of us, you know, took what we could get from our home, and we were having this little cookout. by this canal with railroad tracks and stuff. And I even remember what I wore that night. I was a long time ago. And sometimes I can't remember what happened yesterday, but I remember what happened when I was 13, that when the evening I was introduced to the effect produced by alcohol. And what happened that night was I had four Molson Goldens, a flask of Burgundy, and a flask of vodka. And for about an hour, not only did I experience something that I had never experienced before, and then I experienced some stuff I wish I hadn't experienced, but instead of feeling so inadequate, instead of feeling like I didn't measure up, I felt better than you. I didn't feel equal to you. I felt better than you. I felt funny. I felt pretty. It was just awesome until it wasn't, because after about an hour, somebody who has never drank before and drinks that kind of quantity, what goes down must come back up. And it must come back up with all of the food that went down as well. And oh my gosh. And I was rolling around near this canal. It's a darn good thing I didn't roll in there and drown. And I was just crying and just going on about how my life at age 13 wasn't fair. And I'll get this out of the way. My parents were married to each other and divorced from each other twice while I was growing up. And at this time they were divorced. And so I was probably going on about that. And I also come from an alcoholic family and I'm adopted. None of that makes me alcoholic. None of it. It's just the circumstances in which I grew up. If you read We Agnostics, it says, if you honestly want to, if when you honestly want to, you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. It took me years to realize it was or, not and, or. I identify with all of it. There's times when I honestly wanted to quit. By 2 p.m. or 11 a.m., I was drunk. When I never set out to have one or two, but when I drank, I could not predict the amount that I was going to be drinking. I drank until the job was done. I passed out, whatever. I don't even think I tried to predict the amount I take, and nobody around me could predict it either. So my circumstances in which I grew up or in which I live now, none of that makes me alcoholic. Biologically, I come from a very long line of alcoholics. My grandmother, who I never met, my biological grandmother, she died the classic alcoholic death, drunk and alone. She had three kids by three different men, which her mother raised on an Indian reservation in Bristol, Virginia. And so my biological mom, that's where she grew up. And she went to see her mom before she died only because she didn't want her to die all by herself. But her alcoholism led her to be all by herself. I mean, that's what happens. And sometimes our book, there's a line in our books that says something like, to live by spiritual principles or to die an alcoholic death, these aren't always easy decisions to make. And we're the only people I know that debate those. I had to think about it. It was like, oh my God, do I want the alcoholic death or do I really want to live by spiritual principles? And nobody else has to think about that. If we go interview people at Kroger, they'll look at us like we have five heads. Like, what are you talking about? Not us, not us. We'll roll the dice. I rolled the dice for a long time. So anyway, grew up in an alcoholic home. Both my brother and I were adopted. None of that made me alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is I have an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. And once I put alcohol in, I am off to the races. And when alcohol isn't in my system, I will make that obsession is so strong. I will make a sober decision to throw my life away, though I don't think I'm throwing my life away because I think this time it's going to be different. I have told myself that lie. I can't tell you how many times. So I was introduced to the effect produced by alcohol at age 13. I was rolling around on that canal. Somebody in the neighborhood heard me. They called the ambulance. And again, 1979, folks. And so I wasn't arrested. I wasn't even taken to the hospital. The ambulance drove up the cul-de-sac to where I lived and dropped me off. And my aunt was visiting my mom and me that weekend. And my mom stayed up with me all night while I got sick. And I still remember part of that. My aunt was holding my hair and they call me Lolly. And my aunt was saying, "Oh, Lolly." Boy, that was going to be said a lot in the coming years. And so I came to the next morning, and I mean, my whole body, I hurt all over, probably from rolling around at that canal. I was hung over. I had blacked out. I'm a big blackout drinker. And I knew I was going to be in a lot of trouble. I knew that. And it wasn't that I didn't care, but I had something now. I had a solution. And that's what I was always so confused about. I thought drinking was my problem. If drinking were my problem, all I would have to do is stop drinking. Drinking is my solution. And that explained everything to me when somebody broke that down for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't understand when I was trying to get sober why I could put together a week, a month, whatever it is, maybe longer, maybe shorter. And that uncomfortable, irritable, restless, and discontent that the doctor's opinion talks about, that would set in. And the only solution I knew was to take a drink. And then it was like, oh, I feel better. I would feel better just knowing I had a 12-pack in the fridge. I didn't even have to have it in my system. I just knew it was coming. And when I came to that morning, I had a solution. And no matter how much trouble I was about to be in, because I was going to be in some. My mom and I had a very cantankerous relationship, and alcohol did not make it better. I knew I was going to do it again. And at age 13, I didn't become a morning drinker. I didn't become a daily drinker. I couldn't, I just there. I didn't have the means or the time. But I became a drinker, and I drank alcoholically right from the gate. I started losing friends, people, because where I was, if you were with me and drinking was involved, consequences were sure to follow. Whether it was pool hopping, whether we had our license and I tried to jump out of your car because I was mad. Yes, I did that on 395. And it was just crazy. My behavior was so unpredictable. I drank myself out of dreams. I drank myself out of hobbies, out of activities, out of relationships, family and non-family. I had to start changing friends. I drank myself out of jobs. I remember the first time I landed in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lie I always used to tell myself was I never got fired from a job. I never stayed anywhere long enough to get fired. I told the same place that the same grandmother died twice. And they caught on, and I forgot. And I remember somebody saying, if you're going to be a good liar, you better have a good memory. And I knew this is no lie. I knew a girl in AA who used to keep track of all her lies in a journal so she could look up who she told what lie to. I would try to keep it all going in my head. And eventually you're going to get caught. And I always got caught, always got caught. My husband and I tell our son now, we're like, sometimes people think they can get away with stuff, but there always comes the day and the time when you got to pay the piper. The game's over, And when you're 16 and younger and older a little bit, you don't think that. You just never think anything's going to happen to you. And I had that same mindset too when I was that age. And I guess that's how I rolled. I never thought anything was going to happen to me. And I mentioned my mom. My mom and I don't know when I started disliking her so intensely. I just did. I mean, I have done any inventory I have ever done in this program, my mother has ended up on it. Even if it was like one of these deals where my sponsor said, "Hey, Allison, I want you to just do an inventory on your marriage." My mom crept in. It was just, she was on every inventory I did. I just didn't like her. I couldn't stand her. And before I started drinking, I told you I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I mean, my mom and I have come to physical blows before, and neither of us are big women. And she would go to bed at night with herself and her purse locked inside her bedroom. That's no way to live. That's no way to live at all. I don't live that way today in my home. And I just, God, I would hate that kind of tension and fear. It's awful. And so that's what I brought to the table back then with my relationship with my mom. And just anything bad that happened to me, it was her fault. It was just awful. I still, I'm 59 years old. I don't know when this started. I couldn't tell you this day, this time, when this happened, that's when I drew the line and said, no more mom. I don't know. I just didn't like her. And so my mom, the year before, had shipped my brother off to Virginia to live with our dad. And that's his story. I'll let him tell it. And then I guess one weekend, my mom was going to Ithaca to visit her sister, and somehow I manipulated her into letting me stay home. And I was like 14 years old at the time. And I've told you, we have a son who's almost 17. There is no way we are leaving for a weekend with our son. Hey, I'm in charge of the house. And I don't think he would do what we did, but I'm not crazy. And so I talked her into letting me stay there alone. What I didn't know is she had told some of the neighbors, one of my best friend's moms, just call me in case you see anything weird going on. Well, of course they're going to see something weird going on. I had people we didn't even know in that place and doing stuff that outside issues, and I don't know how we got it all. People were in her bedroom. It was just crazy. And so my friend's mom called my mom. My mom drove 2 hours home from Ithaca and, kicked everybody out. And screaming and yelling at me, and pack your bag, you're moving to Virginia with your dad too. Well, my mom had threatened this so many times. I didn't believe her. I just was like, I can't say it from up here what I was like, but I had an expletive in my head. And at like 6 in the morning, she came in my room. Why aren't you ready? And I was like, oh my God. And I started crying and I started begging, please don't make me go. All my friends were there, blah, blah, blah. Well, I went and I landed at Dulles Airport. And my dad and I always had a really, really close relationship. And I was actually thinking about him a lot the other day, as a matter of fact. I think about him every day, but some days more than others. And my dad was trying so hard to be so nice. And he's like, I know you smoke cigarettes, I know you're drinking. And this is a fresh start, Allison. And actually, I am all about the fresh start, but I'm all about new people, no consequences. That's what I'm all about. And he's like, back before drinking, I was into sports. I was on all kinds of teams, and I had good grades. And not the exact day I started drinking, but within a couple months, all that was gone. It just, I was no longer interested anymore in any of it. And my dad's like, why don't you do this? Why don't you try to join a team? Why don't you get back into cheerleading? Why don't you do this? Oh. And I thought, oh my God, I was probably still really hungover. And I just thought, oh my God, this is going to be awful. Well, we find our people wherever we go. And it did not take me long in Virginia to find my people. And I just, it was like I just picked up in Reston, Virginia, where I left off in Rochester, New York, and just different names, different people. And I just started doing that. And it was just, by the time I was 16, I knew I was alcoholic, though I didn't know what one was. I had never read a big book. I didn't know about the stuff I had told you from We Agnostics, but I did not drink like my peers. And my peers did not like hanging out with me when I was too drunk. I told you consequences followed. And it's my high school was just on and on like that. We would go to the grocery store, a friend of mine and I, and this is before grocery stores had cameras like they do today. We would get all this food, all this alcohol, and suddenly make a trip to the bathroom. We just hang out in that bathroom, lock the door, drink and eat and leave. And that's what we would do. And I don't, that's how we would do before we would go to a party. And I just can't, sometimes I think about it and I think the fact that I'm not in prison is a miracle, you know, some of the junk I pulled. But that's what we would do. And we thought nothing of it. And I was grounded more of my high school life than I wasn't grounded, actually. I got in a bad drunk driving accident 6 months later, got a DUI. I mean, it was just, and that's all when I was 16 and 17. And somehow I got into one college. I went to that one college. And I do remember this, but the night before I left for this one college, I was telling myself, you know, I was starting to do things. I don't think drinking and good morals go together. You know, they just don't ex they don't coexist well. And so I was starting to do things that even I thought was a little, this is a little shady. And I was feeling bad about myself and beginning to not be able to look in the mirror so much and just not liking who I was. And I was looking forward to getting away to this one college as another fresh start. And I thought, you know, I never, it's interesting to me, I never told myself I need to just stop drinking. It was, I need to cut back. Or if this happens, or this happens, or certainly if this happens, I will definitely look at my drinking. I don't think I ever considered stopping. And I'll tell you what, that first semester in college, everything happened. I couldn't have lowered the bar any lower unless I was going to start digging dirt in the ground. And none of it stopped me because I've got that alcoholic mind. This time it'll be different. Okay, you had a really bad night, you had a bad week, you can't go to the dining hall for a while. But that's okay, Allison. You'll bounce back. You'll bounce back, and it won't be so bad the next time. You know, and I told myself that lie countless of times. Eventually, college interfered with my drinking, so I moved back home with my dad and seemed logical to me. And I just started drinking myself out of job, out of job, out of job. They don't appreciate when you come to work at 7 a.m. smelling like a brewery. You know, I'd say good morning to people and they'd look at me like, oh my God. I told you it was sort of by now we're in the 80s. And that was right around when mothers of drunk driving were coming in, and you could still kind of get away with it. I've been pulled over so many times, and then officer, my car would be full of beer cans. I'd be reeking of alcohol. And I remember it like it was yesterday, this one officer saying, ma'am, I'm going to trust this was from last night. Yep, it sure was. It was from like, you know, an hour ago. And it was just a mess. My life was so unmanageable. If I needed to, I'd drink beer with cockroaches in it. I have. And, you know, there's been nights I would run out of alcohol after midnight and I'd be going through looking for vanilla extract. And it was just, I had to finish the job. My husband calls me a real alcoholic. And I'd say, well, you know, you're never going to get an argument from me about that. I had to have it. I would suffer seizures. I would suffer horrible withdrawal, and yet get up the next day and start all over again, you know, and roll the dice. I was a big proponent of rolling the dice. This time it's going to be different. It never was. Most of the time it was usually worse. And I had this thing back then. It was way before cell phones and all that stuff. And I call it drunken dial. Anybody ever do that? And it's like right around the seventh or eighth beer, and you're really drunk, but you can't pass out. And I knew everything that was on Nick at night. And I'd be watching TV, and that's sort of how I ended my drinking alone in my apartment. I could never afford anything. I'd bounce checks just to buy alcohol. I didn't even buy the good stuff. You know, I never had a dime to my name. I drank the most disgusting rot gut, like Black Label, Milwaukee's Best Light. It was $3.87 a 12 pack, and I couldn't pay my rent. That's how I, you know, because I had to drink. And this one particular night, though, I was playing drunken dial and I called my brother. And this was a real turning point in my story. And I called Stephen. And back then, actually, Stephen and I have gotten really close again lately because of the past 2 years of dealing with our mother. But back then we were super close. And I called him and I didn't mean this, but I blurted out, I want to kill myself, because I thought he'd stay on the phone longer if I led with something really dramatic. And now I think, God, if somebody called me saying that today, I'd be having a heart attack. Like, what do I need to do? Where can I refer them? I do not want that on my shoulders. Yet I just thought nothing of calling my brother and saying I want to kill myself. And that was my code for I need attention. And I would have told you when I landed in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a really nice, kind person, but I was selfish and self-centered to the core. And that's one of the times I was, and I still can be stone cold sober. Anyhow, so I called Stephen and I said, I want to kill myself. And what came out of Stephen's mouth, it shows me that God really has a plan for all of us. I get choked up when I tell this because God was looking out for me way before I thought of taking care of myself. And it's just blows me away sometimes how God knows what my life is going to turn out like, even if I don't think it's going to turn out that way. So I call Steve and I said what I said, and he said, you know, Allison, my boss is in AA and he's going to this Joe and Charlie thing in Frostburg, Maryland this weekend. Would you go if they could get you in? Thought I was going to die. And I didn't want or like a real solution. I wanted Steven to stay on the phone and stroke me and feel sorry for me and tell me what a good person I am. And I want to continue getting drunk. And so I was posed with a decision to make. And I said, well, I can't go for the whole weekend, but I can go Saturday and come back Sunday. I had nothing to do Friday night, y'all. Nothing except get drunk. And I get there to Frostburg, Maryland. I drove there in the snow. It was like a 4-hour drive. And the man who was my brother's boss has now been my husband for 31 years. 31 years. And when I met Al, I did not like him. He was way too enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope he doesn't mind me joking about this. Doesn't matter because he knows I do it, and he still does it. He has these acronyms, and he's like, Allison, you know what nuts means? And I'd be like, no, of course I didn't know what anything meant. And he said, not using the steps. Ha, 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 ha. And he'd be like, you know what steps means? Solution to every problem, sober. Ha, ha, ha. And he had this laugh that got on my nerves, and I was like, oh my God, what is this? And I will tell you, prior to going to that Joe and Charlie conference, I had been through four treatment centers. I had been through, I don't know how many detoxes, but I'd been through four treatment centers. I had four big books. I had to look around my studio apartment just to find one and dust it off to go to this thing. And with all of those treatment centers and detoxes, when I was at Joe and Charlie, I never knew that the directions to our program of action were in that book, in this book. I was blown away, absolutely blown away. I did not get sober then, but that planted a huge seed for me. I mean, I was mesmerized listening to these guys. And I often think about how very blessed I am. I've heard some of our greats in Alcoholics Anonymous that are no longer with us. And that weekend, it was Charlie Parmley and Joe McQueenie. And he was the original Joe. Later on, Joe McCoy took over, but it was the original Joe. And, you know, none of them are around anymore. All three of them are gone. And I have had the absolute privilege of getting to hear these guys, a lot of them, sometimes way more than once. And sometimes thinking, God, do I have to listen to them again? And now we can't listen to them at all, except, you know, what we have on CD or 8-track tape. And wow. And so I was listening to these guys and I thought, holy cow, there are things to do here that I just did not know about. I told you I've been through four treatment centers. I've been to a ton of AA meetings. I thought AA was just don't drink and go to meetings. Well, what happens to me when I just don't drink is I go nuts. I go absolutely blooming nuts. And I mean, I will punch you stone cold sober. I will throw a liter of soda at you stone cold sober. I would do things stone cold sober out of sheer anger and frustration that if I had a few drinks in me, none of that would have happened. I had no solution to life. So I would start out great in AA. I would start out going to meetings, loving meetings, all that stuff. And then something would happen on the inside. That peculiar mental twist that our book talks about would take hold. And it was like, oh my God, I gotta go. I've got to leave. I've got to take a drink because I don't know how to live. I don't know how to do this. I can't live with alcohol and I can't live without it. And when you've got that on you, living without alcohol is unbelievably unbearable. And so I had no solution operating in my life. And this weekend that I was at the Joe and Charlie, I mean, I was fascinated, not fascinated enough to stop drinking, but I was fascinated. And so a seed was planted. You know, I knew there were things to do here. I did. I knew there were steps to take. There was directions to take those steps. We have a program of recovery here. It's AA is a huge, huge world. I did not know any of this. But boy, after that weekend, I sure did. There was no denying it. A lot of people will argue and say, well, the steps are only suggested. You know, blah, blah, blah. We've all heard it. And yes, they are. But there are only suggested program of recovery. It's the only suggestion. And alcoholics are the only people I know who can be dying and who are still willing to fight and tell you why they're right. I've done it. I've done it. A very good friend of mine who's with me tonight said, stop fighting. And I'm thinking in my mind, I've got still a lot more fight left in me. We're the only ones who can be dying. But we will bristle with antagonism when people are trying to offer us a solution, the only solution that will save our life, you know? I finally landed in Alcoholics Anonymous in 1993. And that started a journey here that is amazing. And I mean, I'm going to get choked up again. I'm old and I'm sentimental. And so I get choked up. On my birthday, I went through my son's baby book. And anyway, whatever. So in 1993, I landed here and I stayed. And I stayed for 21 continuous years. I got married in sobriety. I had my son in sobriety. I had my son when I was 15 years sober. And my husband and I started this AA life that are some of it is just some of the best times I've ever had in my life. When we first got married, my son's sponsor was a taper, and we had nothing. I mean, nothing. We both had buku financial amends, low-paying jobs, but we had a lot of energy because we were young. And Bob told us if we would help him and his wife at the tape table, we could go to any conference with them in the Southeast that we wanted to. We traveled to Tampa, we traveled to Naples, we traveled everywhere. Jekyll Island, Georgia, that's where we got married. That's where we heard a lot of these speakers. And we worked at that tape table. Bob Hope does not let, well, did not let anybody get away with anything. And it was just some of the hardest work we've ever done, but it was some of the best times of our life. We got to meet all these people and hear all their stories and hear people's takes on recovery and takes on the steps and takes on sponsorship. It was thrilling, thrilling. And we just started this AA venture together, and it was thrilling. And then fast forward a few years, you know, my husband built a business. It's something he'd always wanted to do. And we had our son and we built a home and we started acquiring a lot of things. And my ego, I have a very, very big ego. I have to be really careful today. I mean, I don't think it's ever going to go away. It's just our literature tells me it's not, but we have spiritual principles. We have sponsorship. We have a network of people. I have a lot of tools that I can use to combat this crazy in my head. But I started buying my own baloney. I started thinking it's like in Bill Wilson's story, it's embarrassing to admit, there's a line in there saying I had arrived. I've always identified with that. I always identified with it drinking, but all of a sudden I was identifying with it in sobriety. I'm thinking, I have arrived. I've got my beautiful family, my beautiful son, my beautiful home, my beautiful husband, our beautiful company, blah, 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 blah. And I never left Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what's kind of bizarre about all this. I often wonder if I didn't live in an AA home, though, would have I? Thank God I didn't. Thank God I think our AA life is what saved my life. So I started just living in ways that aren't conducive to staying sober. They aren't living by spiritual principles. And I started having a very, very big double life, maybe even a triple life. I don't know. I'm not going to worry about it now. It's not how I live today. But that catches up with you. And I took a drink. I took a drink after 21 continuous years of sobriety. And I don't say I just took a drink. That drink happened way before I took a drink. I was progressively getting sicker and sicker and sicker in Alcoholics Anonymous. And sometimes I take issue. I don't like when people say the newcomer is the most important person in the room. I've never believed that. Sometimes the people who are in the most danger are the ones with 20, 30 years of sobriety. I'm watching the exit door more than I'm watching the entrance door. And I'm not saying that newcomers aren't important. We need everybody that comes in here. I just don't think it's fair to label anybody as the most important person because we don't know who's dying inside. I was walking around for a good long time dying inside, but with a smile on my face the whole time I was doing it. And it wasn't like I didn't have an opportunity to come clean with my sponsor. It wasn't like I had didn't have an opportunity to come clean with my friends. I had plenty of opportunities. I made a sober decision that I wanted to look good. How I looked to you was more important than what was going on inside. That's not how I feel today. I heard a guy when I was trying to get sober, and he was in Charlottesville, and I've never seen him before, and I've never seen him since. I don't even know if I recognize him now, but what he said, I never ever want to forget. You can save your butt or you can save your face, but you can't do both at the same time. And I remember hearing that, and I was like, boy, isn't that true? I mean, that was my life. How I look to you, your perception of me was more important than what was going on inside. That's what comes from a big ego and needing to be fed. That comes from not having a good relationship with a God of my misunderstanding. I never say it's my understanding, it's always my misunderstanding. And that's where I needed to go. And I was looking outside for all kinds of validation, and never was it enough to fill me up. It never will be. When you're looking for validation from the wrong places, it might fill you up for a second, for a month, a year, a week, I don't know. The most sustaining relationship I've ever had is with the God of my misunderstanding. I knew that's where I needed to go. I drank off and on, more on than off, for 5 years. And there are levels of HELL that I didn't even know existed before because now I'm drinking with a husband, a son. I had everything to lose. And it was just, oh my God, it was a nightmare. I'll never know fully what I put my husband and my son through fully. I can try to comprehend it, but I'm not them. I will tell you, my husband got into a suicidal depression. He broke out in shingles on his head. He broke out in gallstones. It was just a mess. Our son got nervous twitches. It was awful. I broke their hearts and scared them tremendously. My husband probably still has PTSD from that time. And I'm not laughing at it at all, because trust me, if I think too long about it, I can get very dark with it. I remember when I had our son, and I was so proud, thinking he has two sober parents and he will never know what an alcoholic home is like. And one of the things that was so important, and I hope I never forget this. I don't see how I could. Where my son went to school, when you got into fifth grade, it was a big flipping deal. You got a locker. And I remember the day he got out of fourth grade, he came home. Mom, we're going to order all this stuff to decorate my locker. We ordered a chandelier on Amazon. I mean, this kid just, boy, he did it up. It had a carpet, a chandelier, all this stuff. And it sat in our guest room all summer long, and he could not wait. And I mean, he was just, oh my God. And I had already let him down so many times. And you go to back to school night, and all the kids decorate their lockers. It's a big deal. And the night for back to school night came, and I was on a run and drunk. And I got in my car. I don't know how I didn't get caught by the police. And I went to a hotel in Farmville and finished off the drunk. And my son didn't even decorate his locker. He just sent me a picture of his empty locker, and he said he missed it. It was awful. And I can tell you so many stories like that. And anybody who knows me knows how much I love our son and I love my husband. I would not do that to them, but I did. I did. That's how sick I got. And you can't justify that. You just can't. And I will never get that time back. Never. And I've often thought of that. You know, now my son likes to watch these, I don't want to call them stupid, but whatever, YouTube videos. They're somewhat funny. And I will sit down there for a half an hour and watch these crazy things. And I'm thinking, oh my God. But then I think, Allison, you missed the locker. Don't miss this too. You know, this is time I can't get back. So if he wants to watch YouTube videos, I'm watching them. Not always with a smile on my face, but I'm watching them. It's part of my living amends to him. My son forgave me a lot quicker than my husband did. You know, the last night I was drunk, I had no idea that was going to be the last night I was drunk. It was like every other drunk in my house. My son started not wanting to be at our house. And I honestly can't understand why, you know, drunk mom, dad and mom fighting. I wouldn't want to be in our house either. Even the dog didn't like me. And I'm not kidding when I say that. That dog loves me now, by the way, but that even took a year for him to come around. But that dog would take one look at me, get a whiff of my breath, and he'd run downstairs. Al and Jake went to Florida one time for a week, and I was there at that. Now we got three dogs, but at that time we had one. And I'd come home from work, and Jerry would be so afraid of me, he'd run down in the basement. And I mean, it was awful. He even the dog didn't like me. And I don't know where I was going with all that, but I'm having a senior moment, or a pre-senior moment anyway. I think I was talking about not being able to get the time back. Oh, and our son forgiving me a lot quicker than my husband. When I first got sober, and I've given you a little picture of some of the wreckage, my husband was living in the basement. Our son was just living in fear. He didn't, you know, the alcoholic homes are very unpredictable, and kids need structure, they need routine, and our son's routine had been turned upside down. And it turns out our son was having some stuff that totally got overlooked due to me being drunk. The focus was on me. And we're actually, thank God, taking care of that now. But anyway, nobody would allow me to go in my car by myself. I couldn't even get gas by myself. I couldn't go to the grocery store by myself. I couldn't do anything by myself. And after about a month of this routine, I was getting mad. That's how quick my ego rebuilds. All of a sudden, after a month, it's like, why? I'm sober a month. Leave me alone. You know I'm going to be fine. I'll never forget saying that to my husband. You know I'm going to be fine. He looked right at me. He said, no, I don't. I had tried so many times in that 5 years to get sober. I'd stay sober a month. One time I even stayed dry a year. And always that obsession kicked in and I had no mental defense and I would go get drunk. So nobody had any reason to believe after 30 short days that I could be trusted with anything. Yet my alcoholic mind was getting resentful, like get off my back, blah blah blah. It's just amazing to me. And I would call my sponsor and I'd be crying and I think I'm gonna get a divorce, my kid hates me, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you know what, Allison? All you can handle right now, you just need to stay sober one day at a time, and that's all you can focus on right now. And actually another woman that I was talking to, she's like, man, you are so self-righteous. And I need to hear some of these things. I need to be told the truth with love. But I need to be told the truth because if you're lying to me, that could kill me. And I don't need to go down that road again. If anything, now I'm probably overly transparent with people I talk to. I just don't want any stone left unturned. I can stockpile some secrets, and if I think I can get away with it, I am on the wrong road. I remember coming back, that first year of sobriety was awful, just awful. I hated everybody. I hated Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought I'm going to have to move, like maybe Alaska, somewhere nobody knows me, and I'm going to start out over again. I just can't do this. I was ashamed. I was humiliated. I had so much wreckage. I was overwhelmed. And this is funny. The pandemic happened. And I did. I felt so uncomfortable in AA and I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know. And I would talk about it. I would pray about it. I would, whatever, I'd write about it. And the pandemic happened. And all of a sudden, there's all these Zoom meetings. And I could Zoom everywhere. I've Zoomed all over the world. I have Zoomed in places I didn't even think you could Zoom, but you can Zoom. And all of a sudden, little by slow, I got my AA feedback. I guess I had to develop relationships with people who didn't have my history, and just so I could feel comfortable in AA again and feel a little like just get a minuscule amount of self-esteem. And then all of a sudden, I started trying to repair a lot of the damage I had created right here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I always say the pandemic, I know a lot of people hated it. I loved it. I was so excited. I thought, thank you, God, the world is shutting down. I can stay home. And it was just because I was frightened. I was frightened. I was ashamed. And I just didn't know how, I just didn't know where my place was here anymore. And I didn't know if I could recreate it. I just didn't. And it's funny how God works stuff out. I'm not going to suggest that God created this pandemic so Alison Jacobson could feel comfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous again. I sincerely doubt that was on his mind, but it really did work out. And it's just, I look at some of this stuff and it's like I was given just a little bit of a breather, where I didn't have to think, oh God, if I go to that meeting, I'm going to see them and they hate me. Oh God, if I go over here, it's very self-centered and selfish, by the way, but that's where my mind was and that's where I was at. And I could just go to a meeting, I could listen, I could participate, and I could get on fire with Alcoholics Anonymous again. And now I can go anywhere and it's really okay. I love Alcoholics Anonymous again. And I knew at that year of sobriety, I know this is, there's nowhere else to go. This is the only place that offers a solution from the malady that I suffer from. And so I am not deluded into thinking if I leave AA, everything will be okay. I had to find a way to make this work here. And I was looking all online, like maybe I could move here, maybe I could move here. They don't know me here. And I mean, how crazy How crazy. But God gives us just enough room, just enough time, and everything has happened the way and when it has supposed to be happened. You know, I can't tell you the exact day that my husband forgave me, but all of a sudden we were planning a vacation together. And we actually are planning another one. I just booked the VRBO last night and we're going to South Venice, Florida. And I'm so excited. I didn't deserve any of this again. And a lot of people have said, you know, how did you come back and stay? And I only have one answer. And other than God, is that the 21 years I was here, I had built up a network and I had enough friends and family in Alcoholics Anonymous that were going to badger me until it ended one way or another. And I'm fortunate because I know a lot of people who go back out and they're no longer with us. Like literally, a woman I used to sponsor, oh my gosh, I adored her. She was at my baby shower and Lynn knows her, Helen knows her. And I read on social media she had passed away a few years ago. And you know, she drank herself to death. And there's lots of stories like that. And I am so grateful that I am not one of them. And so I will share my experience whenever asked because I'm just lucky to be standing here and I'm grateful to be standing here alive and amongst you. So thank you so much for having me.